Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, God bless you so much. We had one hell of a first hour. It's always great when Dr. Hill comes on. And now we're transitioning to the second hour. Listen, and every single family member of the Blood River Radio crew is going to be on tonight. We're going to be dropping napalm as usual. We've got some great history lessons set up for you. Two great historians, the one and only Bitter Ender Jean Andrews, and the one and only Sister Nancy Hitt, intellectual historians if there ever was one, and Sister little Sister Monica. She's got her story she's going to tell, and she's hopefully, Lord, she's going to take us out. We're all going to sing at the end of the year, especially the Bitter Ender. He's the singing guy. He's got the singing voice. And Sister Nancy is going to play the Alt Ang Syne. So anyway, people, you're listening to Blood River. You're still listening to Blood River Radio. I'm still Eddie the Bombardier. So tonight we're going to have Gene, the Bitter Ender Andrews. We're going to have my big sister, the mean old big sister, the big stick, Sister Nancy Hitt, and my precious little sister who just, I'll let her make the surprise announcement about an event, about an accomplishment she did. We'll have to have a few minutes for that, as long as it takes. And we also have my dear blood brother, Rand, the Alabama Lone Wolf, on tonight. They're going to be pretty much carrying the show. After I bring them in, I'm going to kind of mute myself because we can only have four people on ones at the time, and I want these people on to get their just due because they've got a lot of stuff to say. So anyway, how are you doing tonight, sister, brothers and sisters?
Doing fine.
Thank you.
How about you, Rand? Okay, how about you, Sister Nancy? I mean, Sister Monica.
Doing okay. I'm doing fine. Yeah.
This is really
good. Help
like
anybody.
The whole class now answer, good morning.
Good morning, good morning, everybody, teacher.
Well, everybody say, on the count, when I say three, everybody say, hello, Blood River Radio audience. One, two, three.
Hello, Blood River Radio.
Hello, Blood River Radio audience.
Yes.
Folks, this is our combined New Year's, because we didn't do Christmas because we were dropping too much napalm, but I'm getting ready to shut up. And since my sister Nancy Hitt put this show together, I'm going to drop out. I'll just come in if they need me to bring y'all in and out of the breaks, because I've dropped my napalm on the first hour, and I'll come in the last hour when we sing to everybody. But anyway, go ahead, Sister Nancy. I'm taking myself out now. Sister Nancy, take control of the B-17, and let's get going with that outline that you had. So I'm muting myself right now.
Okay, I'm going to talk about something that some of the audience may already know about this. They may agree and may not agree. But when I was growing up, we did a pledge of allegiance to the flag. That was when I was in elementary school. I don't know if children are still doing that, but I have three objections to the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'll read it. I'll read the pledge to you briefly, and then I'll give you my reasons for objecting to it. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Sounds like FDR. My number one objection is the author of the pledge was a known Christian socialist from Boston by the name of Francis Bellamy. He was a Baptist minister. He wrote this pledge in 1892, and I consider it an anti-Southern propaganda tool. Swearing oaths to the federal government had become very popular during and shortly after the war. Of course, this was written in 1892, some years after the war. But in an effort to paper over the post-Civil War divisions, the Pledge of Allegiance was written by Francis Bellamy in 1892. My second objection is to the use of the word republic for which it stands. In my opinion, the republic no longer exists because of the end of the war at Appomattox. I think we no longer have a republic. We do have some kind of messed up democracy. And of course, I really object to the inclusion of the word indivisible. Secession was not wrong, and I have not been able to prove this, but I know that I've always heard that this happened. During Reconstruction, states in the Cotton South were forced to rewrite their constitutions. And within the rewriting of their constitutions, they were forced to take out secession. With reference to the right of secession, it was based on the Declaration of Independence. One of the statements is that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of the ends for which it was established, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government. Back in the original signing of the U.S. Constitution, there were three states that stood out they refused to ratify the U.S. Constitution unless the right of secession was included in the compact. That was, oddly enough, New York, Rhode Island, and Virginia. Now, all signatures to this compact all agreed to the legal terms of the agreement of the compact, which means that all of the states that signed the compact also agreed that secession was part of the signing document of the Constitution. We know that at West Point, it was being taught that secession was not it was legal, and educated people knew that it was. They understood that it was legal. Those are my complaints about the pledge. I know that some of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, they like to pledge and also pledge to the flag of the Confederacy, and some of the Sons of Confederate Veterans are aware of this and do not pledge. But I personally am against pledging, and at any rate, I'll let Gene say something, but I have something I want to read after he comments on this about why this is so objectionable to me.
Well, as we all know, Lincoln said that states could leave the Union. When he was a representative in Congress, he said that any people anywhere have a right to throw off their existing form of government and form a new one that suits them better. Now, this was when Texas was coming into the Union, and he was against Texas being brought in, and because he was afraid the state was going to be divided up into two, three, or maybe even four states, and that would mean 2, 4, 6, or 8 Southern Democratic senators in Congress, which would outweigh the Whigs. So he said it was all right. He said it's the most sacred, most inalienable right. Well, between the time that he was in Congress as a representative from Illinois and when he became president, he changed. My suspicion is that he was listening to the Eagles in Hotel California, where it says you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. So
right.
That may have been what changed his mind right there.
Right. Okay. Well, go ahead.
I do say the pledge. I say a modified pledge. Have to say the pledge, I stand up and put my hand over my heart and say that I pledge allegiance to the flag of the Confederate States of America and to the Republic for which it stood, one nation, under God, divisible. And then, you know, I think that's a pretty good way to do it.
Right. Well, you know, I have a statement here that really justifies my point of view, I think. I'd like to read it. It's by a man named John Bauer. It says, "The wording which Bellamy used in the writing of his pledge was intended to weld together the mentality of all Americans in their allegiance to a centralized federal government. The word allegiance was taken from Lincoln's oath of allegiance for rebellious Southerners. The word indivisible was in opposition to the concept of secession, which resulted in the War for Southern Independence of 1861 to 1865. both ideas were intended as propaganda tools for altering the minds of school children nationwide, and especially those of the South. Bellamy's idea of liberty and justice for all, found in the 14th, 15th, and 16th Amendment, were really substitute words that he felt forced to use instead of his desired slogan of the French Revolution, which was liberty, equality, and fraternity. Now, this is actually, to me, defines where I'm coming from, as this was nothing but a propaganda tool, an anti-Southern propaganda tool.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it was a good propaganda tool because, you know, when I was in grade school, we all said it every morning. We had a prayer, and then we had the Pledge of Allegiance, and then, you know, sometimes we even had some kind of, they'd pass it around to different students in the class, and you had a chance to get up and read a quotation or a passage from the Bible. And then we would have the prayer and then the pledge and so forth and so on. But we also had a teacher, Mrs. Stewart. I remember her from Georgia. And she was a great musician, could play the piano. And we didn't have to have a special music class. She could play anything you wanted on the piano. And after we'd play a few songs and sing, and, you know, if it's Thanksgiving, we'd sing songs for that or Christmas songs and so forth. But the last song she would always play and ask everybody to stand up would be Dixie. And we all stood and sang Dixie in the fourth grade class.
That's good.
God bless you people for hanging out. We're going to go to our first break. And when we come back, I'm going to shut up again and let Miss Monica, Miss Jean, Sister Monica, and Rand continue on the show. Be right back, folks. Hang on.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church, a congregation of God's covenant people. Informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ had been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
This is a battle. A battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
Dear Blood River Radio audience, thank you. Thank you so much. What a treat tonight. Listen, we have a great surprise for you, but I'm not going to make the announcements. My little sister, I love her so much. I'd do anything for that little lady. I just love her. She's my sister as far as I'm concerned. She has a humongous announcement to make. Sister Monica, Miss Braveheart herself, tell the folks about the huge announcement that you have.
Okay, thanks, Eddie. Well, this should have been done a long time ago. I wanted it to take 1 year, but it has taken about 4 years. But I did write a book, and it is now published, and it can be purchased from the Barnes Review. And so I'm pretty excited about that. I don't have it in my hands yet. Like, I have to get some shipped across the border. And I'm hoping all goes well with that. It has a very controversial title. Same title as the little video I made in 2016. And you all remember what that little video was called?
Why don't you refresh our memory, Sister Monica?
It was just 6 minutes long, but it kind of got me in a little bit of hot water, ended up in jail for 10 months, and all kinds of things happened as a result of that six-minute little video called Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. So, anyway, that's...
You're bad.
I'm bad.
Off the show. Bless your sweetheart. Not only that, she plays the fiddle. But that I'm so excited about that. I definitely want an autographed copy. I'm going to buy that thing. I want to be one of your first customers, and I will cherish it like I do all the other gifts that you've given me and the gifts that Sister Nancy's given me.
Well, that's very nice. Well, Eddie, you had said you wanted me to autograph and send you a copy. It'll go across the border twice that way, but that's fine. I'm very happy to do that, but it might take a long time because the mail is extremely slow in communist Canada, don't you know? It'll take a while, but the place to order them from is from the Barnes Review, so TBR, and I'm not going to start listing numbers right now on the air, but I mean, maybe we, I don't know how you want to handle that, but anyway.
Anyway, so you want to handle is fine. Well, I tell you what, Sister Jay said that the bitter ender has to leave at the bottom of the hour, so we need to go.
Oh no! I'm here for the hour. Whatever you want to do.
Oh great! Okay, well, Sister Monica's got to get her fiddle tuned up because she's going to take us out with the fiddle tonight, and we're all going to be singing. Hopefully, you know. And we expect the bitter ender has the greatest voice of all, except for Rand. So, but
no,
anyway.
God, no, Lord knows. It'll run people away from the radio.
But that's the part I was going to ask the tech folks, if that actually comes across on the air, if we're all simultaneously making noises on at each of our place. I'm thinking that it may not work. I don't know. Maybe we need to ask the tech folks about that.
Well,
okay.
Well, it'll work. Jay said it'll work. And maybe we can get old Jay and Melissa and Lizzie, maybe we can get them into singing too, man. Because, well, this is a special show. This is a hybrid Christmas New Year show. Plus, we always drop some napalm. We always educate y'all people. And speaking of education, I guess we should get the bitter ender back up because I'm sure he has some other stuff to educate us on, bitter ender. So go ahead, brother.
Oh, okay. Well, Nancy sent us out an outline during the week of some topics we might want to discuss, and one of them was black eyed peas on New Year's. And we've always heard that expression that it's good luck to eat black eyed peas on New Year's. And I found where that came from, and it came from a book that's published by Mike Grissom. And you know, Mike Grissom wrote Southern by the Grace of God, and his latest book that's come out, it's called Dixie, Southern Essays. And it's about 13 or 14 essays that he's written over the course of the last 30 years about the South and the Southern people and different topics in history. And, boy, he really rakes the Kennedy brothers over the coals for what they did at University of Mississippi and the University of Alabama. But anyway, he also has a book called Good Old Southern Home Cooking. And one of the parts in there, it's one of the titles, is Black Eyed Peas. And I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs that he had there. He said, few things are more associated with the South than the black-eyed pea. That little old pea is almost legendary down in Dixie. Nearly all Southerners eat black-eyed peas on New Year's Day, keeping alive an ancient custom which purportedly had its roots in South Carolina during plantation days. Supposedly eaten to bring good luck, it is usually served with hog jowl, bacon, or some other kind of pork. When the Union armies and gunboats were shelling the homes, churches, and schools of Vicksburg, Mississippi in May, June, and early July 1863, citizens of the city could not escape the tightly drawn Yankee lines to find shelter elsewhere. Many of them turned to digging caves in an effort to escape the cannonballs and mortar rounds falling on their homes. As the food supplies dried up, about all they had left were their shattered gardens, among which could be found the humble little black-eyed pea. Subsisting largely on those peas, the people of Vicksburg cooked them in every imaginable way, even trying to make them into a sticky type of bread. So there's where the South and the black-eyed pea came together.
Well, you know, I have another
It's other traditions in other parts of the country, and probably they have their own tradition in Canada, too.
Well, I have another take on the black-eyed pea. What I had heard, which, of course, what he said is, I'm sure, correct, but when the Yankees came down south and they burned down people's homes and tore up their crops and killed their cattle and all of their, took their hams and everything, they had no respect for the black-eyed pea. They thought it was cattle fodder or fodder for the animals. And so that is what the Southerners survived on, was the black-eyed pea. And I considered that to be kind of the thing that they were going back to. Thank God for the black-eyed pea, you know, that it saved them from starving.
Can I add one thing, a couple things to that?
Go for it.
They were called cow peas, and they were actually for livestock. They weren't to be consumed by humans. And the Yankees, when they come through, they burn everything that they didn't steal, but they didn't think much about this livestock food because they either stole the livestock or killed it and left it laying where it was. So they didn't think much about it. But that's where I heard that the tradition of eating black-eyed peas come from. But what I didn't know until refreshed my memory on doing a little reading today, it was known as Hoppin' John. Have you ever heard to it referred to that?
I've heard of Hoppin' John made with rice. That's all I know, Hoppin' John with rice.
Like Gene said, it's a lot of probably a little different versions of it, you know, and how it may have come down. But I thought it was interesting that was actually, livestock food. They survived on it.
Oh, I love black-eyed peas.
Oh, they're great. I love them too. In July of 1862, when was Colonel then Forrest liberated Murfreesboro from the Yankees that occupied the town and freed some of the local citizens that were in jail there that were going to be hung that morning. And his boys came storming into town, and they could hear the hoofbeats on the cobblestone streets and the pistol shots and the yelling and whooping and hollering. And they knew Forrest, the Yankees knew Forrest was coming, and so the jailer set fire to the jail and took off with the keys, and these people were going to be burned alive inside the jail cells. So Forrest's men got in and pried the cell doors open and got them out, and some of the other buildings in Murfreesboro had already caught fire, and they put the fire out. So Forrest's cavalry saved the town of Murfreesboro from being burned down, and now they want to get rid of his name at Middle Tennessee State University on the ROTC building because that's offensive for somebody that actually saved the town of Murfreesboro. But anyway, after the raid was over and they'd sorted out the prisoners and torn up part of the railroad and cut the telegraph lines because it was the Yankee supply line, they were fed at Oakland's mansion, and all the ladies had left there, the Yankees had stolen all their hogs, cattle, chickens and everything. They had no meat, so they fed the Confederate soldiers black-eyed peas and sweet potatoes. And the SCV camp in Murfreesboro, I think they still have it, I'm not too sure though, they always had a Forrest birthday dinner in July, celebrating Forrest's birthday, which was the 13th of July, and served black-eyed peas, sweet potatoes, but they did fancy it up a little bit for us modern people. They had barbecue and cornbread and coleslaw and other items as well. So we didn't just have to just subsist on black-eyed peas and sweet potatoes. But that's what they fed Forrest's cavalry after the raid on Murfreesboro.
Well, that ain't nothing wrong with sweet potatoes. I love them, man. Not wild about black-eyed peas, but I've eaten my share just like y'all have. People, hang on. We're going to come go to our next break, and when we come back, I guess we'll see what happened the Christmas of 1865 for Southerners. Be right back, folks, after the Civil War. Be right back.
Your daily Liberty News Wire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA News, I'm Dave Collins. President Biden is reacting to the death of Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. Biden recalled his 2011 visit with the former pontiff at the Vatican. He noted Benedict's generosity and the meaningful conversation the two shared. Benedict passed away earlier today following years of declining health. He was 95. Ukrainian President Zelensky is condemning Russia for spreading terror after a series of missile attacks on New Year's Eve. Zelensky used his Saturday address to vow that Moscow will not be forgiven for deadly attacks on holidays, including Easter and Christmas. He said Russians call themselves Christians, but warned they are following the devil in Vladimir Putin. Flowers are being placed on Barbara Walters' Hollywood Walk of Fame star today. The pioneering broadcast journalist died Friday in New York at the age of 93.
In 1976, she became the first female co-anchor of a network evening news program on the ABC Evening News. She retired in 2014. Walters was 93 years old when she died.
That's Ryan Daniels reporting. What's worse, the flu or COVID? Doctors say you might not want to find out.
Even though both flu and COVID-19 cases have gone down of late, healthcare providers are urging caution. Dr. Jotu Sandhu with Sharpree Steely Medical Group in San Diego says more people could be hospitalized with COVID because they aren't taking the same precautions as the last 2 years.
Most people are not masking up, and most people, and rightfully so, want to get back to normal life. And so that's predisposing people to infection.
Dr. Sandhu says some of his patients report their recent bout with the flu was much worse than COVID. He adds that we haven't reached the peak of flu season just yet. I'm Jeremy Scott.
New Year's celebrations are underway around the world as 2022 comes to a close. The Pacific nation of Kiribati was the first to welcome in the new year, followed by New Zealand. This is USA News.
With PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Mike Campbell here, serial entrepreneur. Let's make sure your current payroll provider isn't overcharging you, shall we? First, go to your payroll provider's website to see what you're currently paying. Oh, what's that? You can't clearly see your pricing because your vendor is running a temporary sale or making you call for a free quote? That's unfortunate. If you go to PatriotSoftware.com, you will instantly see our payroll pricing for companies with 1 to 100 employees. Well, there you go. At least now you know what you should be paying for payroll. Go to PatriotSoftware.com. Use promo code RADIO and get 2 months of payroll processing free. That's PatriotSoftware.com.
With PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Dear Blood River Radio audience, I'm going to go right back. We got a long ways to go and a short time to get there. Don't forget, we're going to 3 hours next week, dear Blood River Radio family. We're going, the bitter ender himself, Gene Andrews, he's going to give us a little taste of what was in store for Southerners. The Christmas of 1965 for the Southerners after Lincoln's war against the South. Go ahead, bitter ender.
Well, now I'm going to turn it over to Nancy. She had an article in her email piece about Christmas 1865. And I'd let her go ahead and take that part right there. So
well,
that was her research, not mine.
Well, I really didn't do the research on that. The only thing I did was I just know that they had a rough time. I'll read you something from 1864 that was written about a Christmas day written by a soldier. And he said, this used to be Christmas Day at home in the olden days, but now owe me nothing to eat. Nothing to wear, nowhere to go, nobody to go with, and no, nothing but war, hunger, cold, nakedness, poverty, and war. Basically, I think what we can say about the South is it was devastated, certainly miles and miles of burned out homes. I'm sure that there's an estimate that 50,000 Southern civilians died. I don't know if that's the case. How could we ever know for sure? But I'm sure that there was starvation in the land for Christmas of 1865. You had people that you didn't know if your if your husband, your boyfriend, your son, your father, you didn't know where they were. You didn't know if they were dead or alive, where they were buried, if they were coming home, if they'd already been killed on the way to get home. So it was a miserable Christmas of 1865. The war had ended in April, but there was still a lot of marauding going on. People who were, the men who were trying to reach the South were just dropped off at various points, and they had to walk home hundreds of miles on foot. If they were lucky to get a horse or any kind of animal mule to ride, they would certainly be, it would be a hazardous trip, because even though the war had ended, I'm sure there were a lot of Confederates who were killed by the enemy on the way to their homes. A lot of people, it probably took them ages to know that there was actually, that the war had ended. I mean, a telegraph would be the only way. And there was a lot of partisan activity at that time, too, before the before Christmas and probably after Christmas.
And it, a lot of these prisoner of war camps up north, like Camp Douglas in Chicago and Hellmyra in New York and Point Lookout, Maryland, and Johnson's Island up on Lake Erie, they at the end of the war, they just opened the gates and said, get out.
Right.
You're going home. Get out of here. And they provided no transportation, no food, no nothing. So not only did you have to walk or beg a ride, you had to walk or beg a ride through enemy territory to get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they didn't take them down to the old Ohio River or the Potomac River and say, okay, we're releasing you here to into the former, you know, states of the Confederacy. You had to walk from Chicago to Albany, Georgia, or someplace like that.
Right.
Or Jackson, Mississippi, or whatever.
Well, when, so go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I say when Jesse James turned himself in to at the end of the war, what did the Yankees do? They shot him. So know, he lived. But they did shoot him. He survived that. But that was kind of reception that surrendered Confederates got. They got some of them got shot. Some of them got killed surrendering.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you know, it got even worse after that for the rest of the South, the ones that weren't soldiers, because Reconstruction started, passed the Franchise Act where Southerners couldn't vote. And all it took was a neighbor saying, well, I saw old Nancy or whoever sell a bag of corn to the Confederate cavalry, and then you couldn't vote. Well, of course, women couldn't vote then anyway. But, you know, for the males, all it took was an accusation. So that meant you couldn't vote for a sheriff. You couldn't vote for a tax assessor. You couldn't vote for anybody in the government in your locale. And so you got nothing but corrupt, rotten people, carpetbaggers from the North that were running the governments, and it was run by the legislatures that were filled with illiterate blacks that were told how to vote. And it bankrupted the Southern states. What wasn't lost in the war was destroyed after the war during the 12 years of Reconstruction.
You know, I think that the Southerners in the state of Tennessee were not allowed to vote for 15 years after the war. You know, now back to this diary that was about the 1864 Christmas that was written by a Kentucky Confederate. He said, the day used to come with booming guns and blooming lasses, with jingling bells and merry faces, with candy kisses and smoking turkeys, with Kris Kringle and Santa Claus. But, oh me, Kris and Santa are both dead, killed in the war. Guns and lasses and kisses and balls and turkeys are subjects of sweet, sad, sorrowful recollections. Now, this is a year before we're talking about. This is a Christmas of 1864. So it was rough. I mean, I compare the devastation and the horror of that the Southerners had to face very much in some respects like what we did to the Germans and what they had to face in 1945.
And a lot of the horrors that were brought upon the Germans were after the war was supposedly over and they had surrendered. And once they had surrendered, then the Americans got really brave. And usually it's the ones that weren't frontline combat troops that get really brave once the hardcore soldiers are away from them and disarmed. Then they get really brave in taking it out on their former enemies. And you're absolutely
so true.
Right. What the the Germans had to face and what the Southerners had to face was pretty much the same thing from the benevolent United States government. And they like to give you this happy horse manure about how they fed the kids, and they showed pictures of GIs reading the funny
the
papers.
Oh, the chocolate bars, the candy bars.
Oh, yes,
that makes me sick. Makes me sick. We killed a million innocent civilians after the war thanks to that no good Eisenhower. You know, everybody loved Ike. Yeah, sure.
Especially the communist Jews.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that's another reason we jumped from the American War for Southern Independence to World War II and what they did to the Germans. And that's one reason why our own government killed George Patton, because General Patton said, you know, we butchered the wrong hog. He said, we should have been fighting on the side of the Germans against the Bolsheviks.
He was a little bit late in saying that, of course, but a little bit late after the war was over. Well, Monica she probably knows a little something about what happened, I guess, and I'm sure she knows.
Yeah, I'm listening very attentively to what you're discussing, and it's so true. After the war, after open hostilities ended, you mentioned that's when, you know, some horrors were unleashed. Well, yes, that more Germans died after open hostilities ended than during the war. It's hard to fathom that, but that's what I've read and seen in reports over and over again. Is that true, Gene? Like, that's, I don't think
I'm
wrong about that.
I've read that in several, very subjective, honest accounts of the war, like David Irving and some of the others that have written some things that based on historical fact and not propaganda.
Well,
and so
for a lot of the German civilians, it was much worse after the war was over than during the war.
Yes, and I know that from my parents, their firsthand accounts of after the war. That's when they went really hungry. My mother talked about that quite often, how hungry they were, not during the war, but after the war, at least where she was. And so I did, you know, think about this and look up some things and try to find some things about 1945 Germany Christmas scenes in such as all these orphaned children rummaging among the ruins in Berlin and so many other cities that had been firebombed and really just demolished, just flattened city after city after city. This was a deliberate strategy by the Allies to do the terror bombing of German cities. And so after the war was over, I mean, it was just in ruins. And then you had all the Germans fleeing from the further east, what used to be Germany further east. And actually a little bit later there were two big waves of these expellees being pushed out of their former homelands that they had been in for hundreds and hundreds of years. This was their lands, and they were pushed out. It's the biggest expulsion in modern history that we know ever.
Right.
And anyway, in the USA, well, I hear the music, but I would like to say a little bit more after this break.
Comparing
the American Christmas with German Christmas in 1945.
Of course. Absolutely. We insist. Be right back, folks.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust.
Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, if there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people, unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Dear Blood River Radio, time is of the essence, so we're going to go straight to Sister Monica. She has some incredible historical information for you. So go ahead, Sister Monica.
Yeah, Eddie, just before the break, we were talking about the fact that more Germans died after the hostilities ended in May of 1945 than during the war, which is really quite incredible if you really stop to think about it. You know, because the war did kill a lot of people, including a lot of German soldiers, just so, so very many. I mean, that war went on for years and years, and it was brutal. Anyway, I was doing a little bit of looking online about Christmas 1945, Germany. And of course, it was a sad state of affairs in Germany in that year. And then at the same time, all these stories were popping up about American Christmas 1945, the biggest celebrations ever, the biggest parties. It was just everything joy and wonderful, right? But what I'd like to remind the listener of is that these are brother wars that were fought. So many of these Americans who became soldiers and went over to Germany killing their cousins it's Mr. Schmidt firing bombs and firing guns at Herr Schmidt. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, these, mm-hmm. yes, so that's something too important. And in your first hour, Eddie, one of the last things that Mr. Hill said is that we need to name our enemy who fomented these wars, because we are in a war still. We know that. We've talked about it many times. And if we're afraid and cannot name the enemy, then it's pretty hard to win. And we intend to win this war. We are going to come out victorious because the parasite cannot win. The parasite is a parasite, has nothing of their own. They only leech from us. So we intend to win, but we must know and name the enemy in order to do that. And people are afraid to do that. And we know who started and fomented World War I and World War II and the so-called American Civil War, which was the war of aggression against the southern states, right, which you talked about during the first hour and also during part of this hour. So I would just like to really highlight that. And now there's a recently published article on our Truth and Justice for Germans site, which I'd like to draw your attention to. And it's about German POWs that were in camps in the USA after the war, after World War II, and nobody really knows what happened to all these German POWs, the prisoners of war, in these American camps. There were all kinds of mainstream stories about how they were being pampered and were being given so much food and beer that they had to waste it because they were just overflowing in all this, you know, luxury, which is complete hogwash, of course. But this is what the mainstream was talking about. But it seems that nobody really knows. So I would encourage listeners to go to it's just one word, truthandjusticeforgermans.com website and read that article by Larry Romanoff, who wrote about these prisoners. He's been researching it for many, many years and has not come up with any clear answers. Maybe somebody has some things that they can offer to help him with that, and you would find that information there. So anyway, I'll just hand it back to one of you, and I know that we are running very short on time.
I'd just like to chime in and say one thing before we go back to Sister Nancy. My mother, she was born in 1924. She talked about the German POWs in Arkansas. She lived in a farming country of the St. Francis and Mississippi River Delta. And she said most of those German prisoners were really nice, strong, good, hard workers. But that's, she said very little more about that. So I couldn't add anything to that. But you're right. I like to emphasize one thing. It's always the Jew. It's always the eternal Jew. The war, you're absolutely right, Sister Monica. We have to identify this enemy. They have been trying to wipe out white Christianity ever since they said, give us Barabbas, and even before that. And that's the same people who started every stinking war. It's the same people who are running a proxy war against the last remaining white Christian nation in the world, Russia. That's who's running that war there between the Israel in the United States of America. That's all I want to say.
Exactly. Thank you for naming them. I was, going on and on about how we need to name them, and then I failed to name them. So
always
thank you for doing that, Eddie. But also,
I'd like to say one thing. Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
I just checked the website, and it's the second last article that was written. It's Prisoners of War in America on the Truth and Justice for Germans website. So, yeah, that's all I'll say on that. I'll hand it back. Thanks.
One last note. We'll try to get Tom Goodrich on.
I was going to say one thing before
we close
out. I was going to say what I did on Christmas Eve.
Oh, sure. Yes, please do.
You know what I did on Christmas Eve? I watched a censored movie. Sound of the South, that beautiful, beautiful movie with Zippity Doo Dah and Uncle Remus.
Oh,
and
I saw that when I was a kid.
It's censored.
Yeah, Song
I
of
watched
the South.
It.
Yeah,
my brother and I watched it back when I was just a kid. And it.
Me too.
The song's absolutely beautiful. And I'm going to defer to Rand and see what Rand has to say about Christmas.
Yes, good idea.
Well, just first thing that comes to mind is just remembering the Christmases that my mama worked so hard, and my daddy too, but mama more so, to make it so special, to try to make it magical, and it was just real special times. And, and as long as my grandmother and all of her sisters and brothers was alive, there was always big gatherings. And, people die off. Big families die off. Things change. And it's kind of sad, things change over the years. But talking about the Christmases being rough in 1865, without a doubt, they were rough for many, many years after also for the Southerners. It took a long time to recuperate. And, y'all, you're talking about the War of North Aggression. We talk about World War One, World War Two. Think about the loss of life. Think about the young, the good stock. If you really think about it, it's amazing. It's just the Lord's blessing that there was any really good stock left after the killings on a lot of sides of that war. So anyway, I've been enjoying listening to y'all. While I have a chance, I would like to tell everybody Happy New Year. Includes
Happy
our
New
listeners.
Year.
Yes.
Thank you. Oh, and I'd like to echo something Eddie always says to our listeners. We can't appreciate y'all anymore. And like Eddie says, y'all make the show, I know we don't like to call it a show, but y'all make the show go on. And we appreciate y'all, and we don't take y'all for granted. And
God bless you, Rand.
Are we ready to sing? Because it must be about the end. Where's our violinist?
Yes, we got about 4.5 minutes. 4 minutes.
Great.
So, I think the violinist is going to warm up. But I'd like to wish everybody a happy New Year and a Merry Christmas. And I'd like to also thank each and every of the brothers and sisters that's been on this program tonight. I do consider them brothers and sisters. I've always been a really emotional guy. I either love people or I hate them. There's not much in between with me. And I love these people on the air. They're the salt of the earth. The people that are on this show with me, on this broadcast with me, they're once in every two or three lifetimes. There's just no people like that left anymore. I promise you, you would not believe how rare they are. But it's so great to share this program with them tonight. And Sister Monica is going to, we've got about 3 minutes left now probably. She's going to play old outside, and I'm just turning it over. We'll just do what comes naturally. Sing, wish the people a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, whatever you dear blessed sisters want to do. But Sister Monica, you got your fiddle there?
I'm ready, and I just want to say also it's such a pleasure to work with you, Eddie, and with all the others who are working with you here. And yeah, I just love doing this. And I just want to say to all the people out there, hearts high, and you know, keep your spirits up, and do not hold on to fear and all those things, because that just gets you down. And it's pretty hard to win a war if you're feeling down and glum. We're in high spirits, and I say hearts high, and let us play and sing.
God, that was fabulous. I didn't know you were that good, Sister Monica. Before I forget, I'd like to thank Sister Nancy. Sister Nancy is the one that designed this whole program tonight. You did a marvelous job, Sister Nancy. I love you so much. I love each one of you. Love you, Sister Nancy. Love you, Jean and Rand and Miss Monica. I'd do anything for y'all. There's nobody like you. And I saw somebody said something here. I thought I saw something on the chat. Oh, okay. But Jay, would you like to come in? We have a fella here who his family runs this board flawlessly. We could not produce this show. We could not do this show like we do. Jay, if you would honor Blood River Radio and come in to say something for our audience? Tell the people a little something about yourself and Miss Lizzie, and Cameron too, if he's there.
Hey, we appreciate you guys.
Miss Lizzie, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Say something to the audience. Miss Lizzie's only 15 years old, people. She's one of the people who makes Blood River Radio go, and she also makes the Political Suspect go. But would you like to say something to the Blood River Radio audience, little baby sister Lizzie?
Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. People, what a wonderful treat it's been having these God-fearing, once-in-a-lifetime friends coming out, once-in-10 lifetimes. I'm just humbled, and I don't really know what else to say except I hope you had a wonderful Christmas. I hope you have a happy new year. And I hope and pray that we're all together this time next year. I hope and pray that the international Jew doesn't lead us into total destruction in an all-out nuclear war with Russia. And we're closer than you could possibly ever imagine. With that, I'll just turn it over to all of our people. Everybody,
hey,
all the Blood River Radio crew, tell everybody good night.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, all of you Blood River Radio people. God bless you, each and every single one of y'all. Good. I wouldn't trade you people for all the tea in China. Good night, everybody. Same time, same deep point. See, next week we'll be coming along at 3, an hour earlier. Good night, everybody.